Welcome to the Fantasy Connection Podcast. I'm Eddie Wasserman. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm joined here as always by Colin Kaffour. Colin, how are you today?
Doing good, Maddie. I'm doing good. I took a tough L in week 13, but I have already clinched the playoffs in a couple of my leagues, so that's always good. So we're just going to ride it out, maybe get some waiver pickups to help for the playoff stretch as opposed to right now.
Yeah, so there's a few interesting storylines we have going on in fantasy right now, and I think we have to start with the performance of George Kittle, who was the top scorer in all of fantasy this week, 39.6 points. He has 9 receptions, 181 yards, 2 touchdowns on 12 targets, a dominant week for him. And what I want to talk about in general is the tight end position in flux in fantasy. Kelsey puts up single digits. Where does Kittle rank in the hierarchy of tight ends, especially with his performance this week?
Well, an interesting stat with George Kittle is that he is among 3 tight ends ever to have 2 instances of more than 35 fantasy points. You remember last year?
Wow, that is a crazy stat.
He had 15 catches for 183 yards and a touchdown week 4 last year. And then this week, like you said, he went off again. And that list does not include Travis Kelce. It includes Shannon Sharpe and Kelvin Winslow. So he is obviously in good company in that regard. So I think he's going to slot in with Waller out and Waller not doing much. I think he's going to be number 2. He might even have upside to be number 1, especially with the fact that Debo is probably going to be out for maybe a week or maybe a week after. And then also Eli Mitchell is in the concussion protocol as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, especially in regards to Debo and the performance of him. But I think with Kittle, like, it is interesting because this is coming off a week where he had 1 reception for 13 yards. So it's difficult to kind of anoint him, and that's why I kind of wanted to lead the show with Kittle, because I think it's an interesting test case. What do we do with someone that just had 1 reception for 13 yards against Minnesota in week 12, and then he comes out with this performance in week 13? Like, it's so difficult to kind of quantify that. I think when you look at the playoff stretch coming ahead, it's certainly encouraging. Week 15, Atlanta, 16, Tennessee, 17 Houston in the playoff stretch. Those are inherently good matchups for the tight end position, so I think that that's encouraging with Kelce, but it's certainly difficult to say when over the past 2 weeks, so week 11 and 12, he got a total of 6 targets in those 2 games combined. Now he comes out with this monster performance. It's kind of hard to say where we feel about him. I still lean towards Kelce being the number 1 tight end, and I think that I feel confident about him despite this performance, and it was a bad performance for sure with Kelce putting up, what do you have, 5 points in this game? Not a good week for him, though. So it is concerning, but I still think with him, the consistency over the course of the season has still been better than Kittle.
Yeah, the good thing about having one of these tight ends you spent an incredibly high draft pick on is that you don't have to worry about them when they have a bad game. Kittle is a prime example of that. Even with being, he's the number 3 wide receiver tight end in standard, number 6 in PPR, he was out for 3 weeks in this year. He had that 1 catch for 13 yards game, so in this offense, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be what he is, which is a top performer at the tight end position going forward. And if you have Kittle, I mean, trade deadline's already passed, so it's not like you're stuck with him because he's good, but you're just happy to have him. You drafted him and you stuck with him all this time, and now he's finally paying off.
Yeah, and the important thing to know about Kelce still on that topic, he still got 8 targets this week, which is the same he got in his last game, week 11 against Dallas. So there's not too much concern for me on that end, especially he had 3 performances of 17 or higher over the 3 weeks preceding this game. So I'm not worried about him. And generally, the tight end position was tough. Another tight end that had a really bad week, Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz was horrendous in this week's game, just putting up an absolute nothing. And I wonder with him at this point of the season, do you still feel comfortable in starting a guy like Ertz as we pinpoint this point in the season? Are you all right?
I just fell off my chair. I'm good.
All right, guys, sorry, this is not a video format, but Colin fall off his chair. So anyway, Zach Ertz puts up 2 points this week, and I think you wonder from the tight end position, is that a guy you can trust? Who can you trust going forward? I mean, Gronk probably. There's just not that many people.
Yeah, we said, I remember saying after that week 11 game where he had 28 points, wait until after his bye, you can then try to shop him off the highest value he would ever be at. And if you did that, you're obviously happy with your decision because he put up only 2 points, only 2 targets, 1 reception. And, you know, within that Kyler Murray offense, where Zach Ertz is going to be vultured, in a sense, by Kyler running at the goal line, just like James Conner will be going forward, I believe. But Zach Ertz, you know, it is interesting the way that he only got 2 targets coming off their bye week, and that 88-2 game was with Colt McCoy. So there is something to be said about Zach Ertz's connection with Kyler Murray not being as strong as we would have hoped.
I do think that's interesting. So I want to now transition to one of our big losers of the week, and that is the Ravens offense, and especially my perpetual take all season about Rashad Bateman. I'm hearing it from the crowd right now, and reasonably so. Bateman might be droppable, and I think the Ravens' offense in general is certainly very interesting to talk about right now. Lamar Jackson, as long as he's providing rushing production, is still going to be a quarterback one, but the offense is difficult to trust, especially when it was so bad. Yet again this week, they lose to Pittsburgh in a horrendous game, and I think that as a team, how do we evaluate where the Ravens' offense is right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Marquise Brown was the number 8 wide receiver in week 10 or week 9, and we were like, this guy is huge. It's finally his breakout year, but he's seen his production drop off. He had double-digit points in this week, 5 for 55, but, you know, with Lamar Jackson throwing the ball the way he is, which is not great, and also being pressured on, like, all of the snaps. He took 7 sacks in this game from that Pittsburgh defensive line. And, you know, you expect maybe 40 or 50 rushing yards with a rushing touchdown from Lamar to supplant his floor, but you saw 55 rushing yards but no touchdown there. So the fantasy production, only 17.62 points with 250 yards and a touchdown, just isn't going to cut it for you. And, you know, after that 32-point week against Minnesota in week 9, you're like, okay, this is finally the guy that we drafted. And he hasn't looked the same after missing that game in Chicago.
No, for sure. I don't think he has. And I think in terms of the pass catchers, over the past 3 weeks, in terms of routes run, Mark Andrews has run 114 routes and has 29 targets over those past 3 weeks. Hollywood Brown, in contrast, just 75 routes run, 17 targets. So I do think it's interesting to kind of see that discrepancy in terms of also average yard per target. Mark Andrews, 11.52 average yards per target, where it's just around 7 for Hollywood. And I think that it speaks to an interesting thing about the Ravens' offense, which is that Brown's production is still dipped down. And again, you have him on your team. You're going to be starting him as we hit the postseason. But I do think it's certainly alarming for someone like Hollywood Brown. And someone, by the way, if you hold Lamar, the production over Lamar has certainly been concerning over the last few weeks. He kind of hit this peak, it seems, early in the season. He's down to QB8 all of a sudden of the year, and it gets really concerning after he put up the 9 points against Cleveland in week 12. He puts up 17 this week, and it seems good, but it's definitely still concerning when he's not putting up to any passing production. 23 for 37 this week. Not an efficient game. In the eye test, he doesn't meet it either. So there's definitely not the QB1 that you thought you had maybe in week 5, week 6, that part of the season. But I still think he's a starting level player. It's just generally a lot of concern for this Ravens team.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, talking about Rashad Bateman, held zeros on his horse. He put up a goose there.
It was tough. It's been tough for the Rashad Bateman crowd.
Yeah, not that great of a moment for the entire Ravens offense, losing to a Steelers team that, you know, is quarterbacked by Big Ben, not necessarily the greatest offense.
Tough day for the entire team.
Yeah.
So I think that was a tough one. But in terms of some more winners that we saw in this week, now the team was a loser. A horrendous loser. They lost to the Detroit Lions. But I think that Justin Jefferson is one of the big winners of this week. You know, we never want to root for injuries, etc. But the Thielen injury undoubtedly helps Justin Jefferson in what was already, he's already one of the top receivers in the league. But when you take away a target machine like Adam Thielen in this offense, all of a sudden Jefferson is all they have to fall back on. And he had a monster performance in this game. How about 11 receptions, 182 yards. He got a touchdown, 14 targets for him. Huge day for Jefferson. And going forward, if you're a Jefferson manager, you have to be so encouraged about what you saw.
Yeah, absolutely. Adam Thielen is not going to play on Thursday. He had a high ankle sprain. He already didn't practice today on Tuesday, so you don't have to worry about that. Justin Jefferson, you saw him take a goal line touchdown where he kind of did what Adam Thielen would do, run a good short route and get open in the end zone. That's kind of Adam Thielen's game, especially this season, where he has, you know, a lot of touchdowns. He has 10 so far on the year. He and another player on the Vikings, KJ Osborne, I think is worth a look, because
maybe
I think Thielen is going to be out. You know, this is a potentially good game. I mean, the Steelers, they were able to hang toe-to-toe with.
I mean, do you also look, though, towards Tyler Conklin? Because in terms of the production out of players, once Thielen went out in this game pretty early, obviously, in terms of the production of players on the team once he went out, Tyler Conklin got 9 targets in this game, which was a pretty good performance. He had 7 receptions and 12 points. You know, he hasn't been a huge factor throughout the season, not a starting-level player. But I do wonder, when you have the season high in targets for Conklin, if that's someone you might look to replace some of that production. Osborne maybe, but I don't think you're really starting him. I mean, maybe if you're really desperate as a flex play, but you're probably not starting him. And this Vikings team, as I mentioned, a terrible week for the team itself, but a huge week for Justin Jefferson that definitely bears mention.
Yeah, for Tyler Conklin, he is at a different position than KJ Osborne, a position that is, you know, right, much worse overall. So he is on the waiver wire in 69% of leagues. and, you know, he is an option. Playing on Thursday, I don't really like having waiver wire pickups play on Thursday. It's not, I just don't like it. But, you know, with the tight end wasteland that is the position this season, Conklin is probably one of the guys, you know. If you have a guy like Freiermuth, who we were talking up, you know, maybe you want to pivot away.
Yeah, maybe it's been a little bit of a rough run here for that team. So I want to transition to now David Montgomery. And Montgomery was really good. I know we talked about before the show, you wanted to hit on Montgomery. Montgomery had a really good week here, and it looks encouraging for him. I mean, obviously, you know, the team, not a good week against Arizona, but 21 carries in this game has to be encouraging. But I think what really stands out is the 8 receptions he had in this game. His season high in receptions have been 3 coming into this game. He puts up 8 for 51 yards, and that's where you kind of like raise your eyebrows and it's like, huh? Like, really? And that's where, like, if that continues, then he's actually escalated into a top level back.
Yeah, we talked about David Montgomery not getting the targets.
And that happened.
Was from him not getting him having the lowest target per route run of his career at 10%, which was down from 41% last year. And then we saw that positive regression. His target per route run this week was up at 44%. So I think, you know, if Justin Fields comes back, I think that receiving production is going to go away. The Bears coaching staff is iffy on whether they're going to start Fields in this game. But I think Montgomery, I mean, we did say, or I did say, start him over Gaskin. That was a mistake. But Montgomery, you know, putting up 28.1 points with that 8 receptions and 141 yards from scrimmage and that touchdown, you know, he is doing what he should have been doing against the Lions. He did this against, who was it?
This week, Cardinals.
Against the Cardinals, which is not a great rush defense, but, you know, he couldn't get it done against the Lions, so there's a lot of concern there. But then he comes in, puts up almost 30 points in Week 13.
But yeah, guys, we do apologize for our pro Myles Gaskin advice. That was not our best work. Yeah, sorry, Crowdsland is here. That was not our best work, the Myles Gaskin. But we rebounded in a couple of areas, and I think that something that was interesting this week in general to me was the output of. I think we saw this week a few quarterbacks rebound and a few offensive rebound. And what I want to highlight here is the LA Rams, because the Rams had a huge week. I mean, Cooper Kupp, we don't need to, like, his lows in the season since week 5 has been 18. Like, we don't need to, I mean, it's been insanity. But I think the team as a whole really had a rebound. It's Jacksonville. I get it. The game was over right at the start. But I think the encouragement from a team-wide perspective coming off that Green Bay game, it's encouraging to see this offense have this rebound. We kind of a get right game as we head towards the fantasy playoffs, seeing this production without Robert Woods. Van Jefferson seems primed for kind of a breakout here. I think if you have him at this point in the season, someone you potentially want to ride out here. He gets 16 points, 6 receptions, 41 yards he got in the end zone. So I think that without the context of Woods, Van Jefferson, someone you want to look towards, Sony Michel this week. A lot of storylines with the Rams, but in general, an offensive boom for them and something very positive with so many fantasy players who are on this roster.
Yeah, with Sony Michel, Daryl Henderson was active in the game, but he did not record his snaps. It was the Sony Michel show. He was on the field for 98% of snaps.
Crazy.
Which is a Christian McCaffrey level. He had a fantastic game. And with the wide receiver weapons, Van Jefferson is slowly but surely making his way into your flex or maybe even low-end wide receiver 2 options with that 16-point game coming off an 18-point game last week.
I mean, that 18-point game, though, it was 3 receptions, but it was on 9 targets. And I think that's what you want to see. The target share is definitely increasing for him over the last few weeks.
Yeah, and that 9 targets corresponds with 10 targets from Odell. So they're getting the ball to both of their secondary options at wide receiver. That's Matt Stafford doing that. And then obviously in that last week, Kupp got 13 targets as well. So, you know, the throwing acumen of Matt Stafford in this Rams offense is enough to support 2 wide receivers in Kupp and Jefferson. And then Odell, you know, with the right matchup, you can maybe consider starting him.
I think Jefferson is someone that you want to start, though. I mean, I think, like, in general, he has 134 receiving yards over these past 2 weeks on 76 routes run. And I think that overall, the average depth of target is something that's really encouraging at 13 air yards per target. That's something that I really look at as a positive sign for him because they're using him in a stretch roll down the field that gives him the upside to have those 3 receptions for 93 yards. But as he gets targeted more in 76 routes run over those past 2 weeks, something that's encouraging and a clear correlation since Woods went out, how his role in the offense changed. He's someone I certainly look at. I mean, there's maybe certain scenarios where you don't, but I think for the most part that Jefferson's a guy you start. And when Henderson comes back, presumably this week, and I mean, he was never hurt, but like technically, but yeah, for all intents and purposes, he was. I do wonder, can Michelle be kind of used after this? Like, what the deal is with that?
Yeah, this Rams game is against Arizona on Monday night. It's obviously a huge divisional matchup. And so I think they're going to put Henderson back in on the field in this game. I don't think there's a question about it, but Sony Michel proved he is more than capable of handling that lead role in the Rams offense.
Yeah, he did, and it was like kind of an outpouring from a guy who's been like, oh, Sony Michel, like a meme for so long just because of what we know about him from New England. I thought that was interesting. And speaking of backfield splits and someone that got prominent roles with someone on the injury block, the Denver Broncos this week is one of the most interesting things that I think we have to highlight. First of all, give it up here, Javonte Williams. You just give it up. The crowd really loving what was one of the best performances of the entire week from Williams. And this is something that I think, like, if you watch the games, you've been able to see all season that Javonte Williams is kind of awesome. And they're not really letting him go because Melvin Gordon hasn't been bad, but Javonte Williams, 29 points this week. He has 23 carries, 102 yards, but it was the 6 receptions for 76 yards, and he had a receiving touchdown that really stood out for him. And you wonder, Melvin Gordon presumably comes back, but when, if ever, will Javonte Williams finally vault up into just being the lead back in this offense?
Yeah, he got 23 carries in this game alongside 6 catches for 76 yards and a touchdown. A lot of that receiving work was on in a garbage time driver. He didn't end up getting a touchdown. But when Gordon comes back, I think you're going to see that 23 carries, maybe lower down to 15 or 16. But I think the receiving is going to stay very similar. I think he is shown to be the more dynamic back. I think that's very clear, even when running the football, not necessarily just catching it. So I think this is, I mean, obviously 28.8 points from a guy you drafted, you know, in the 7th or 8th round. He's finally breaking out for your team. And I think the head coach of the Broncos knows what he has in Javonte Williams, so they would not be, it would be foolish to not utilize him more than they have been.
I mean, I think that that's an argument, but I think the argument to the contrary would also be that Williams has never been a guy that was a high usage. Even in North Carolina, he wasn't some crazy high usage guy. He not, I think the stat was 416 scrimmage plays in 3 years at North Carolina, which is not a very high number. And that's something that if you want the peak production from Williams, well, maybe the answer is you aren't going to be able to play him that much. I think that's certainly consideration. And by the way, Melvin Gordon's been good. Now, I'm someone that has Melvin Gordon and intends on starting Melvin Gordon once he returns to the lineup. And as someone who rosters Melvin Gordon, it is something that I worry about, and I think it's reasonable to worry about. Javonte Williams looks like the better back, so it's an interesting kind of duality to monitor at this point of the season, just because Gordon's been productive and you can't deny it, but at the same time it just feels like they get that like extra burst when Williams out.
Yeah,
there.
Absolutely. His rushing attempts are clearly more lightning fast than Gordon is. Gordon did get that long touchdown run in week 1, and Gordon is practicing this week. He's expected to. So I think we'll see both Gordon and Williams on the field in the game against Detroit. It is a game against Detroit, so I think you can start both of these guys if they're both active.
I think you can, too, and I think you feel really good about starting Williams, pretty good about starting Gordon. I'm going to start Gordon, as I mentioned, but I don't think you feel, like, awesome about that at the same time. So it's an interesting one to monitor just because there are a bunch of these running back splits that we kind of talk about. But someone that is primed to take over a huge lead and one of the winners of this week is Josh Jacobs. Well, Josh Jacobs is a huge winner because of what happened around him. Kenyon Drake with, I think, what was a season-ending injury for Drake.
Yeah, he's already out for the season.
Yes, and by default, that makes Jacobs one of the winners. And in addition, not just by default, I mean, he had 24 points this week. But again, it was the receiving work that was just really stands out. 9 receptions, not only 38 yards, it wasn't overly productive, but getting that kind of receiving work with Drake out, if Jacobs takes over this lead role where he's kind of just the everything back, that's really intriguing in fantasy.
Yeah, his route involvement percentage was at 71%, just behind Fournette, Connor, Michelle.
Fournette.
Yeah, Fournette, we've talked about a couple times, he is ridiculous, and you never expected his usage in the passing game, but he's always open.
He's like, oh yeah.
With all the weapons that the Bucks have, they don't try and cover Fournette in the shallow area of the field because they're too busy trying to stop Evans or Godwin or Gronk. So Fournette, it's a whole different topic, but he is 77% on ground involvement, and Josh Jacobs is 71%, and that was emblematic in his 9 receptions for 30 yards. And that's just fantasy upside right there. There's no other way to put it. Josh Jacobs on a pretty, they started out solid. They're not so solid anymore, Raiders team, but I think Josh Jacobs is primed for a huge stretch run.
I agree, and I think like that's someone, and again, we don't root for injuries, the whole thing, but if you're a Josh Jacobs manager, you were certainly encouraged by that news and by how they utilized him throughout this week. So I think going forward, I'm not expecting him to get 9 receptions in every game, but you mentioned the amount that he was targeted on routes and the amount of routes that he was asked to run in this game certainly implies that they know they have to use him more with Drake out. So I certainly think it's encouraging.
And over the last month, and this was weeks with Kenny and Drake on the field, Josh Jacobs' target per route run is at 28%. And just guess who that is tied with in the league?
Leonard Fournette.
CeeDee Lamb, George Kittle, and Cooper Kupp.
Not even running. I thought we were qualifying this with running.
Cooper Kupp has 28% targets per route run, and Josh Jacobs has the same. Fournette is 1 percentage point down at 27 with Jalen Waddle. But Josh Jacobs, he's an elite company right now, and the hype is warranted with him. In fantasy, upside on the running back position comes from receptions, and he is getting those. That's all you need to hear and all you need to know when it comes to putting Jacobs into your lineup at this point.
I agree. So now I want to move to one of our favorite teams that we've talked about all season, and one of our players who has now been off leagues, and he could be back. Drumroll, please.
I have no idea.
Mike Davis.
Oh, Mike Davis.
He's back. Mike Davis is back. What a performance, 16.9. We've talked about our good pal Mike all season long. What a day he had. This Falcons offense, it's so difficult. I have no idea what's going on with this team. I have Patterson. All of a sudden, Patterson like isn't being used, isn't getting a lot of receiving work, and now all of a sudden, like Mike Davis is getting the pass snaps. Mike Davis, 31 pass snaps this week, 19 for Cordell Patterson. Like, what is going on in this world right now?
Yeah, Mike Davis puts up 16.9 fantasy points, and this is kind of what we expected, not necessarily only the 8 carries. But getting an 8-point PPR
floor. Yeah, but he's now the rush now. So now I'm seeing in the stats that now he's the passing down receiver and Cordell Patterson's run. Like, it's so confusing.
Yeah, it would make more sense to split out or to put Patterson in on receiving downs because he has a background as a wide receiver. And we saw that in a couple games where he screamed down the sideline to get that game-winning touchdown. I don't remember exactly what game that was, but Mike Davis just can't do that. He did get a touchdown. It's his best game in a long time, I think, since the entire season. He hasn't put up more than 16 points. Last time he put up double-digit points was week 8. So if Mike Davis is on your waiver wire, don't pick
him. I mean, he did have four. So he had, my point in saying this was, he had 4 carries. Don't pick up Mike Davis. Like, please don't. We've had Mike Davis talk all season long. Patterson only has 12 points, but again, I'm not cooling down. I'm cooling down Patterson relative to my RB2 take a few weeks ago. But since then, I think Patterson, you're still fine with this performance. He's getting 13 rushes. I mean, the receiving work is starting to get a little bit concerning for him just because one of the appeals to Patterson all year long was that he was, like, also used as a receiver, and now it's been 3 straight weeks where he had 3 receptions this week, just 2 against Jacksonville in week 12, and he had 1 reception against Dallas in week 10. So it starts to get a little concerning because, like, the whole thing with Patterson is, oh, he's a running back and a receiver, and now if he's not being used as a receiver, there was also some concern, I think, that this third guy, Quadri Olison. Sorry.
I think it's Olison.
If Quadri is listening, I'm sorry. But I think that one is a little bit concerning for me, too, just because there's a lot clogged there. But I still think you feel good about Patterson. Don't pick up Mike Davis. And from the Falcons offense, Russell Gage had a huge week, 22 points for him, 11 receptions. He had 12 targets. He caught 11 of them for 130 yards. What a week for him. And I think we've talked about how Kyle Pitts is a ghost. No one in this offense seemed, from the receiving position, seemed worth rostering, but now Russell Gage is making a case.
Yeah, no, he is taking up those middle-of-the-field targets that are available when defenses double-team Kyle Pitts. It's the mentality that I'm not going to let Kyle Pitts beat me, I'll let Russell Gage beat me. And, I mean, he put up, 24, 22 fantasy points, and he lost a fumble as well. So he's recorded 18-plus PPR in back-to-back games, including against Jacksonville, where he had 18.2 points. So if he is on waivers, he's 54% rostered, so it might be a little tough to find him.
Is he starting? Is he a flex play?
Oh, absolutely. I think with the 12 targets and against the Carolina defense, that's probably going to sell out to stop Kyle Pitts once again. I think Russell Gage is an easy PPR floor starter, maybe 10 points floor is what
you're checking in here. Are we still starting Kyle Pitts?
I mean, you kind of have to.
But, like, do you?
If you...
Like, I know you have to because, like, it's Kyle Pitts and you drafted him high and you felt good about him 2 months ago. But, like, do you have to start Kyle Pitts?
Because any week he could put up 180 yards and a touchdown.
Really, though?
Any week he can do that. I think...
Are we sure
he's... Tyler Conklin might be better, like, at this point.
In his last 6 games, he's had 10 or less. So, like, at a certain point, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, he had that 2 week stretch sandwiched around his bye where he put up 26 and 23 points, and you're like, okay, this is what this guy can do. And since then, he's only cracked double digits one time, like you were saying. So against Carolina, like, I don't know, it's an exploitable matchup just because of his profile as just a massive tight end, 6'6", 246. And but you know,
you want him to be good, but is he good?
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd rather have Tyler Conklin.
Conklin, I'm on board with that. I'm sure we'll get a lot of boos from the crowd.
We'll see once Conklin throws up a quick 20 bomb. We'll see what they say.
We'll see what happens. So I think that's it for our winners and losers. Now let's get to some waivers this week. It's getting deep in the season, of course, and the waiver wire is thinned out in some areas, but there's still some value I think we could find this week on the wire. So who's your top targets this week? We kind of mentioned some of them, Russell Gage, KJ Osborne, some of the obvious ones, but who else are you targeting?
Yeah, I think if either Dontrell Hilliard or Deonta Foreman is available, I would try to pick up one of those. I would prefer Deonta Foreman just because they are facing against Jacksonville and Jerry McNichols.
Really, I feel like Hilliard is kind of established as the top guy, though.
I mean, Foreman put up, both of these backs put up more than 100 rushing yards in their last game before their bye week, but I think Hilliard has more of that McNichols role, and I think when McNichols comes back from the concussion protocol,
that's interesting, actually.
You know, Hilliard will be regulated to more, not even a change of pace, but a backup change of pace. So I think Foreman is probably going to push 15 to 17 carries against a not good Jacksonville run defense, one that, you know, I'm not comparing Foreman to Henry, but Derrick Henry has demolished the Jacksonville run defense many times in the past.
Yeah, well, they're kind of like combining in terms of carries. It seems over the last couple weeks, obviously they're coming off their bye this week, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen. But I do think they're both worthy targets this week. I think you kind of pick up either of them. Again, would I really want to start either? Like, probably no, but I think they're worth picking up just because we don't know exactly. We're still kind of playing out the usage just because there hasn't been that many games since the whole situation with Tennessee's been a flux. They obviously, Henry goes out, then they sign Peterson, it was McNichols, Peterson's cut, McNichols is hurt, now it's Hilliard, now it's Dontrell Foreman. So it's kind of like all over the place in terms of structure of that. We're still kind of feeling out basically how they plan on utilizing this current iteration of the running backs. So I think that you want to just pick up both. Basically, at this point in the season, on the waiver wire, throw it against the wall and see what sticks is kind of my thing. But also, like, is Tevin Coleman someone you can pick up this week? I was just thinking. I mean, I know it's the Jets and whatever, and it's like, oh, Tevin Coleman, that guy's been around forever. Like, it's not exactly a fun pick, but I feel like Tevin Coleman could be interesting.
Yeah, he's playing a tough Saints front that shut down Zeke. Gave up that big play to Tony Pollard. I think Tony Pollard's explosiveness is not even close to Coleman's, and Coleman probably is less. But Coleman had 14 touches, turned into 77 yards. If he's force-fed targets like we saw in the first couple of drives in this game, I think Coleman could be good. I would prefer to get someone else, though.
I agree. So I think, like, again, there's not that much going on left on the waiver wire. We mentioned Russell Gage. Russell Gage is probably owned in most semi-deep leagues where people are paying attention. But if you need someone, we'll go back to the well of Giants receivers. Kadarius Toney, again, like, I know we kind of half mentioned Toney all the time, and he's not been that impressive. He's been hurt a bunch, and it hasn't, again, been overly a great sign for Toney. He hasn't played in a few weeks, but when he did last play, he had 12 targets. Gets in the game in week 11 against Tampa, and it finally looks like he's making his return potentially this week. I think he's he was inactive this week, but it looks like he's going to play. But I think he could be a flex option just because Zebra Ride's upside of when he has played, they've loved targeting him.
Yeah, I would push back on this a little bit because Jake Fromm is probably going to be starting.
Jake Fromm.
It's not going to be Jones. It's probably not going to be Glennon, even if it is Glennon. There's not really much upside there anyway. So I would stay away from the Giants offense. If you have Barkley, you're probably starting him, but any of the wide receiver options with Jake Fromm starting, I would prefer to pivot away from and just not mess with that game.
All right, that's fair pushback. Anyone else for you on the very depleted waiver wire at week 14 of the season?
Yeah, there's Jamichael Hasty.
Oh,
Eli Mitchell is in the concussion protocol. Jeff Wilson has a ankle strain, so he is next in line for touches. A Kyle Shanahan starting back is usually good. We saw that with Eli Mitchell in the first game of the season and the rest of the season as well. He's number 18 running back in standard leagues. But given the way that the Niners rushing attack operates, there seems to be value whoever's the starter. So I think if Eli Mitchell isn't clear, Jeff Wilson is held out with that ankle strain, I think Jermichael Hasty could put up a solid day. And he is also more a receiving back, so you could see more catches than you would originally from an Eli Mitchell type or something.
Yeah, and we talked before, other people that I'm kind of thinking of, we talked about Conklin before. To the extent Conklin's not picked up in your league, that's a guy who, with Thielen out, seemed to get a lot of production. Again, that could be a one-week fluke. It could be a random thing. We don't know. But in general, with the tight end position, there's just nobody. So anyone that you could potentially find any semblance of value.
If Ricky Seals-Jones is available, I would maybe try to get him with Logan Thomas out, presumably for the season. Prayers up for Logan Thomas. It just sucks that he had sustained that really rough injury on a hit that probably could have been avoided. And another guy, I think Jalen Guyton might be an interesting pick. He's coming off of a big week, but you know, normally you wouldn't even want to touch him, but Keenan Allen was placed on the COVID list yesterday. So if Allen isn't able to get cleared, I think Guyton is going to step in as the number two guy. And in a Justin Herbert-powered offense, when Guyton is already the deep threat, I think he'll get more and more opportunities, maybe push 8 or 9 targets.
That's actually an interesting one that I think about, but there's not that much left in terms of this point of the season. Anything else for you? Sorry we did not have any fan questions this week. Some of the fans kind of let us down a little bit.
Yeah, no, it wasn't great. One more guy, I think Jameson Crowder with Corey Davis out for the year.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, he's going to be the number two.
I mean, it seems like Moore is the biggest beneficiary of. We didn't really get into the Jets center, but it does seem like Moore is going to be the big. He had another huge week, and it seems like he's going to be the main beneficiary of the Davis injury, but there's certainly a few repercussions that were. The Jets are providing like sneaky, not like a lot of fantasy value, but kind of around the fringes. You can kind of find a little bit of value here and there with their offense.
Yeah, his Crowder's playoff schedule is the Dolphins, the Jags, and the Bucks, which is favorable passing defenses, so he could be a difference maker. And you're not expecting Crowder to slide into the number one role. He's never been that guy ever in his career, so I think just eating up those middle of the field, short area targets for Crowder is going to be a PPR nightmare for your opponent. So I think Crowder is an interesting pickup. He's not obviously at the level of Elijah Moore or anyone like that, but I think Crowder could be a difference maker down the stretch just with the absence of Corey Davis and his, he's good at getting open in the middle areas of the field.
Yeah, so if you're getting desperate, that's someone to look at. So, all right, as we said, no fan questions this week. Colin, I think that's all we got for now. Sorry, a bit of a shorter episode, but we'll be back a little bit later breaking down some playoff potential matchups and previews a little bit later. So we'll have hopefully a 2-episode week for you on tap this week. And, of course, get into the playoffs coming up soon. Should be an exciting few weeks. Colin, thank you very much as always. It was another quality episode.
Yeah, absolutely, Maddie. Thanks for having me, and let's go win some week 14s.
Let's do it. I'm Maddie Wasserman signing off, and we will see you next time on the Fantasy Finessers podcast.